All right, I think it's time. I think we're ready to get started. We got a few more people trickling in. So welcome everyone to deep dive into the TFS Agile Planning Tools. My name is Aaron Bjork. I'm a program manager at Microsoft and your host for this session. So I'm gonna go ahead and get started here. I kinda like to start all my talks with a little information about myself so you know who's standing up here talking to you. I won't read all this, but I'm a Seattle native, so I'm one of the few guys at Microsoft that was actually born in the Seattle area and joined the mothership. I've got three kids. Who out there has more than three kids? Look around. These are the people you should be very proud of. Take them out for a beer later. There's two things that are interesting about me outside of building software, and that's that I love to play golf. It's a passion of mine. I've played for maybe the last 10 years. And I recently moved to a piece of property where we have 15 acres. And so I'm in the business of learning how to run a small farm. So I just bought a tractor a few months ago. And I'm learning how to have all kinds of fun with that. I was originally a business major in college, so I didn't study computer science. But fell in love with programming right out of college. And one thing led to another. In my 11 years at Microsoft, I've played the role of developer and dev lead. I did that for the first 6 years, and then I became a PM a little more than 4 years ago, and we call that joining the dark side within the company. So you go from somebody that actually does work to somebody that just creates a lot of work. So it's a little bit about me. First time to New Orleans as well, so glad to be here and having a lot of fun. Our agenda for today's talk is here. We're going to talk first about what we call agile portfolio management, and that's really about scaling your agile teams. And I want to share with you the investments that we're making in that space and be really transparent about where we're going. I think this is a big space. It needs a lot of love. And if you're struggling with it, I hope that what you'll see today will help in some way. And I'm in the business of building tools that will help you, so please come share with me your experiences. I want to demo for you after that and give you some example scenarios, so I want to show you some of the new bits, the things that are coming out in the next version of Team Foundation Server 2013. And then I'm going to wrap it up with sharing with you a little bit about our process and how we run our teams. So if you were in my talk yesterday with Peter, this is going to be a lot lower level than that. I'm going to talk a lot less about principles and actually show you some of what we do. I'm going to show you some screenshots of our bug forms. I'm going to show you how we actually put our teams together. And I'll be very transparent about lessons we've learned along the way, things that I think have worked well, and then also things that haven't worked so well. So that is our agenda. I will try to leave some time at the end for questions. It always kind of depends on how it goes. But if you have them, hang on to them at the end, and I'll try to leave 10 minutes, and we can use the mics. I'll also guarantee you that after the talk, I'll head over to the Visual Studio booth, and I'll be there for most of the rest of the afternoon. So if you have a follow-up question, come find me there, shoot me an email. I want to hear from you this week, so don't be shy. Okay, so we're going to start with agile portfolio management. What is this? I like to kind of frame the problem with some pictures before I jump into demos. So these are some of the visuals that I'm going to use to frame that problem. I think of each of these things as a team. So this is Team A, Team B, and Team C. And what each of these teams has is a backlog of work, and that's represented by the little blue rectangles beneath it. And then the widths of the rectangles represent the size. So just think of this as three teams with three different backlogs. And if you kind of step back a release and look at the investments that we made in Visual Studio 2012 and then Team Foundation Server 2012, we really aimed at a single team on this graph. We wanted to make Team A, in this example, very, very successful doing Scrum. Scrum was really sort of our model. It had become the kind of de facto agile process, if you will. Most teams were either in the business of trying it or experimenting with it or doing it, and they were looking for support from the tools that they were using. So what we did is we went and spent some time building a backlog management tools. We built sprint planning tools. We built task boards. We tried to make that experience good, and I hope you think that we did a good job. I know there's rough edges. I know we've got a lot more work to do there. But in the end, I felt like we were somewhat successful in that. But what's happened is that as these teams are getting more comfortable with agile methods and getting better at it, and teams are growing, and we've got more and more teams, we're ending up with a problem. And that problem is that how do you make sense of all of this across a whole bunch of teams? And how do you understand what everybody's doing? And how are your tools supporting you in that regard as well? And so my job as a tools guy is here to tell you that I think we're making investments in Team Foundation Server 2013 to help solve this problem. I'll be very transparent that we're not going to solve every problem that you have, but I can make a commitment that this is a place that we're not moving away from. I think we've got to have strong support here. We've got to have strong tooling, and we've got to have strong answers for teams like yourselves. And so I think you'll continue to see us making investments in this space. If you've been paying attention to our updates over the last, the last calendar year, really, you've seen that we've already made a few investments here. And if you've listened to Brian and others talk this week, I think hopefully you've seen an affirmation that that will continue, and we're going to continue and continue investing in this space. So, again, I want to hear from you. I'm not going to promise to solve all your problems, but the ones that I'm not solving, I want to hear about. And I always say that that one of my jobs is to apologize to people, is to tell them I'm sorry. It's a difficult part of my job, but I also I think that we're setting our own company up for being able to say I'm sorry a lot less. And instead of saying I'm sorry, I'm not doing that in the next release, and talk to me again in 2.5 years, I can now say, you know, I'm sorry, I'm not doing that in the next sprint or in the next quarter, but it is something that I've got an opportunity to fit into my schedule, and I want to hear from you and I want to understand it. So again, please come talk to me about it. Okay, so how are we going to solve this problem? The approach that we're taking is has many different facets, but the first thing that we're doing is we've added into the product the concept of what we call portfolio backlogs. And I'm going to demo all this for you in about 10 minutes here, so kind of stick with me as I tell the story. What is a portfolio backlog? It's just a backlog above your traditional product backlog, above your team's backlog, and it's a place where you categorize larger items. Some people ask me, what are those larger items? Are they epics? Are they themes? Are they features? They're whatever you want them to be. I think there's not a science to that as to what to call them. We're calling them features in the out-of-the-box process template. I don't love that word. I struggled with it a little bit, but we couldn't find a better one. So if you have a good idea, you come talk to me. There might be time to still change that. But I think of it as a grouping of a set of stories. It's some end-to-end set of functionality that a customer can complete with your product. Usually it's made up of, you know, 3 to 8 user stories. And internally, we call these experiences, and I will share with you that as well. But the word that we used internally in our process template is called an experience. So when you've got one of these portfolio backlogs, you want to reorder it just like other things. You want to add to it quickly. You want to add a bunch of fields, and we've got support for all that. What we've also got is what we call backlog linking, and we allow you to take this portfolio backlog and then attach it to all the different backlogs on your other teams. This is done through work item links. So if you're familiar with TFS and familiar with the concept of linking, this is really nothing new. But what we're doing is building a fit-for-purpose experience around that to make that really easy, really fun to use, if you will, and hopefully very, very useful. So that's the first thing. That's called backlog linking and portfolio backlogs. Obviously, each item on your backlog can be linked to many other items. Okay. So what's one of the kind of tricky issues in all of this is that if you heard me talk yesterday, I'm a big believer that you need to give teams autonomy in decision making on their own. And one of the things that can become a problem in this space is that as you start, you know, tying everything together, you can create this big almost ball of goo that becomes almost impossible to work in. And suddenly, you've got way too much process, way too many fields, way too much complexity, and it becomes a problem for your teams. And so one of the things that we've really been trying to keep our eyes on is how do we give teams autonomy throughout this process? I want you to be able to tell a story. I want you to be able to see it end to end, but I also don't want everybody to have to do everything exactly the same. I think if we end up in that space, we've somewhat failed. So we've done some work here to help give teams autonomy, and I want to show you what that is as well. How many of you have read this book? Anybody read Drive by Dan Pink? See a couple hands, just a few. You know, it's always kind of a funny thing for me to say, but if there's one thing to take away from this talk, it's not really what I say, it's what this guy has to say. This is a fabulous book. Read it a couple years ago. It's one of those books where, you know, you're in bed late at night reading, and I keep stopping and turning to my wife and saying, you've got to hear this, and I would read it to her, and eventually she just stopped me and said, you know, okay, I'll read the book too. You know, it was one of those kind of situations. Pink's book, Drive, the subtitle, if you can't read it there, is The Surprising Truth About What Motivates Us. And he says that if we give teams and we give individuals three things, that great things will happen. And those three things are autonomy, mastery, and purpose. Autonomy is obviously the ability to make decisions for yourself, the urge to direct our own lives, if you will. Mastery is the ability to get really good at something. And then purpose is sort of tying it all together, is why is what I'm doing, why does it matter? Why should I care? And if you can give people these things, again, great things will happen. And I'm a big believer that we need to try to give our teams, our software teams, these things as well. And I'll show you a little bit more about this in a second. Pink tells a great story, which I'll tell now briefly, which is he outlines two business models. And he says, I'm going to give you a choice between two groups of people trying to do the same thing. One group of people has limitless amounts of money. They're going to write a business plan, hire the best people in the world, and they're going to go solve the problem. Okay, that's plan A. Plan B is we're going to let a bunch of people in their spare time contribute to this thing as they want for free. And he says, which one are you going to make your bet on? And if you're like me, and I think most of us will fall into the same camp, is you would pick group one. You'd say, I'm going to make my bet on group one. Well, those two groups of people in that situation is Encarta on one hand, and Wikipedia on the other hand. And both of these groups set out to become the greatest online encyclopedia the world has ever known. And if you've ever followed the Encarta story, they tried for years to do this. They had limitless amount of money, great people, and a great plan. And they lost out to a group of people that was doing this for free in their spare time. And the point of the story is not that, you know, the Encarta people were bad or wrong or anything, but simply that the folks at Wikipedia had these three things, and look what happened. And it's kind of interesting when you step back from that and really analyze it. And so, again, I always think about these things. I have them up on my wall in my office, my soon-to-be team room, and I always think about autonomy, mastery, and purpose, and how can I almost get out of my team's way and let them make decisions for themselves? How can I let them get really, really good at something, which is the mastery piece? And then how do I make sure that what they're doing is connected to a purpose, and that they understand that. I try to connect our teams with customers as much as possible because they want to know that what they're building matters and that it's got a purpose and that it's not just because some muckety-muck up high thought it was a good idea. Okay, so I'm going to step off my soapbox, buy the book, read it, and let me know what you think about it. Okay, so how are we giving teams autonomy in all this? And I want to highlight a couple of key features. The first is we added support for Kanban back in the fall of last year. How many of you are familiar with Kanban? Great. So I'm not going to take any time to explain it. But one of the interesting notions of Kanban is that, by the way, I always get stuck. I never know if I should say Kanban or Kanban. So I'm going to go with Kanban, I think, for this talk. If you're a Kanban team, you want to visualize your work. And so we've got those boards now where you can visualize your work. But what you also want to do is you want to have the ability to set up the columns that make sense for your organization. And we added support in Cumulative Update 2 earlier this year that every team, and even our stakeholders now with their portfolio backlogs, can go in and create their own set of columns and take all their work through that set of columns that make sense for them. Now, each of those columns map to a work item state. So there's a great story here because you can roll it all up still into these coarser grained items that make sense. But you can still give teams the ability that if they need a couple of extra columns to break down the work or manage the work in a certain way, you can do that. So that's one of the ways that we're giving teams autonomy. The second is what we call work item tags. This is another feature that showed up in Cumulative Update 2. And this is just the ability to add some very, very simple metadata to your work items and the items on your backlog. We're not done here. We've got more work to do to support querying on these items, saving filters. We've got a laundry list of things that we want to do here. But I'm really pleased with the start, and I've already seen internally and with customers that they're loving this. Because now, if you heard me tell the story yesterday about Custom 01 and Custom 02, which were these random fields on our bug form that had no meaning, but everybody needed so they could put in there whatever they wanted. Now those things are going away because people can use work item tags to mark up their work items with the metadata that makes sense. You don't have to go to your administrator and beg for a new field or something like that. So that's work item tags. Okay. And then finally, what I'm going to show you here in a minute is that these portfolio backlogs scale to N levels. I say N, but I really think we capped it at like 7. So if you have a work item hierarchy greater than 7 levels, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to disappoint you. I also think you're crazy, but we'll talk about that later. Out of the box, we're going to ship 2 levels. So we're going to ship your main product backlog, and we're going to ship this feature backlogs above it. That's across all 3 of our templates. That will be the story for our service as well. So the Team Foundation service supports this today. If you played with the service, you can go do that and see the 2 levels. But for on-premises customers and eventually for service customers, when we open up customization, you can scale this up. Internally, we have 4 levels. Well, really 3 levels. We have scenarios at the top, experiences, and stories. Those are our 3 levels that we use. And then we break our stories down into tasks. So I'm not really including tasks on here. But I'll show you how those look as well. Okay, so that in a nutshell is what we're doing for Agile Portfolio Management. And I want to switch over and actually demo it for you so you can get a flavor for what it looks like. I want to take you through a couple of example scenarios and show it off. And then we'll step back out of that. What I might do at the end of the demo, depending on time, is actually take a couple questions, if we have them, about the specific features. So let's see how we do. All right, I'm going to switch over to my other machine here. All right, great. I've got a couple different team projects here that I'm going to bounce around through, but let me get started here on this Fabricam Fiber project. So let me highlight a couple things. So what are you seeing? First of all, this is a product backlog. This is what we shipped in TFS 2012. I can come up here and add new items very quickly. We can rearrange them. Some of the new features that I just highlighted is I can open up these work items and add tags to them. So not only can I mark them up with the fields, but I can come up here and do this kind of stuff, add new tags as I need them. Once those tags exist, I can come up here and filter, break down and see only the ones tagged inventory or only the ones tagged phone. So you kind of get the idea. But this is our backlog management experience, and I think most customers are fairly happy with it, and I feel pretty good about it. A couple of interesting things that we've done here recently. One is we added the concept of work item colors. This just showed up a couple sprints ago. So you'll notice that this one guy right here is red, and that's because if I open it up, that's a different work item type. It's a bug work item instead of a product backlog work item. And this is one of the things that customers had really asked us for, because if you're a Scrum team, typically you've got bugs and PBIs on the backlog together. But there was no way to differentiate them other than having to do this, which was put another piece of text on the form, which just took up space and was sort of annoying. So we added these work item colors. If you go look, I think I wrote a query here that has all the work items. And let me just switch off the pane here. And as I scroll down, you can see out of the box, tasks are yellow, test cases are orange. You can see the different colors there. So I think it makes the UI look a little bit nicer as well. So that's another new feature. Now, one of the things that, again, I talked about earlier we've done is we've added the Kanban boards to this. So this is different than your task board, and let me show you that difference. If I jumped into a sprint is a board where you have stories or PBIs on the left, And then you break those items down into tasks and move them across these swim lanes. So, you know, I've got an item here, and I might add a new task. And remaining work of 3. And, you know, you can watch my burn down chart up there as I change this value. I change it to 13, it'll go way up. But the team will use this board to break down their stories into tasks and then manage those and move them through through the states for their work items and burn down the work. So that's kind of the traditional Scrum flow. So this other board is different than that. This other board lives directly off of your backlog, and it's a Kanban board. And what that board includes is these columns, and you can compose those columns as many as you want. You can add work in process limits or WIP limits for each of them. So I can say that I only want to have 2 in the specking column at once. And if I added a third, you'd see that it turns the column header red just to kind of visually grab my attention that I might be creating a flow problem here. So I might move that back. And what you can also do is with the items on this board, you can customize them and map work item states to it. So if I added a new tech ed column here and give it a WIP limit of 2, and let's move it to the approved state. So if I take my work item here, demoing at tech ed, I know I'm moving fast because I'm trying to get through all this stuff. You'll notice that it's in the new state right here. And I'm just going to drag that guy over to the tech ed column. And when I did that, I open it back up, you'll notice that it's been moved into the approved state. So these columns that you're creating are mapped directly to the work item states that you know. And what's nice about this, and I'm going to show you this in a second, is every team can have their own set of columns. So I love this feature because as a product owner, you know, I don't think in just to do, in progress, done. I think in terms of columns similar to this. All of my experiences, if you will, have a, you know, we're grooming an experience, or we're storyboarding an experience, or we're getting ready to spec an experience, or it's ready for a review with leadership. And we take them through all these different sort of meta states or columns, but I can't ask my, you know, TFS administrator to go add all those states into the work items. It just doesn't make sense. And so I look at the board a lot more than I look at the backlog now. And I think it's been a great feature. I hope you're getting good use out of it as well. A couple of things that we have plans to do, which I'll share with you, is right now you can't reorder vertically on the board. So I can't move things up and down. I can only move things side to side. We do have plans to add that, so I'll say coming soon. And then also you can't add new items directly from the board. Right now you've got to go back to the backlog and open up our add panel and add here. And we're going to work on fixing that as well so that new items can be added directly from the board. So those are some of the new Kanban features. We'll also get better support for tagging and things like that in here as well. But I wanted to give you a quick demo of that. Okay, so now that we've seen that, let's go look at some of the other stuff. What's up above each of these items? And I'm going to jump over to a different board. And this is my feature board. And this board is a set of items that live above that backlog. And what I'm going to do is, you can see there's a different set of lanes here. If I moved back and forth, you see that, you know, we've got new specking tech ed ready here. And then up here at features, we've got new storyboarding, reviewing. So a different set of columns. These are custom to this particular backlog. I'm going to move back to my backlog view and show you that here I can move things up and down just like everything else. But what's really nice is I can drill down. And what I can do is map each of these items down below back up to a feature. So at a higher level, at a coarse grain, I can understand the progress of things that we're working on, but then I can look at all the things that they're broken down into. Now, obviously, we had this for tasks before, but we didn't have it for anything else. And so the support that we've added here is for these additional backlogs above your product backlog. And we even allow you to do things like drilling down all the way into the task level. I don't know how interesting that scenario is all the time, but I know a lot of people like to do it, and so it's there. You know, have fun with it. Some things that are not in this particular build, but I can tell you are coming, is we have a great mapping experience for this functionality coming. So, like right now, let me move back to my backlog, and see this guy I had it here up at the top, ASADF. If I wanted to map that to a feature on this list, which is like phone support for technicians. You see, this is how bad it is. I'm going to go to, okay, feature 83, and I'm going to go to backlog items, and I'm going to open it up, and I'm going to say links, and I'm going to say add. Nope, I didn't even do that right. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to add a parent, and I'm going to find 83, and I'm going to save and close, and yay, I finally did it. Now, that's not a great experience. I feel horrible telling you that because I know that's the experience you have today. But I am really excited that we've got a great new mapping experience where you're going to get a new pane that shows up on the right so you can view backlogs side by side, and you just drag and drop between them to create these work item links. And I think it's going to create a fantastic experience for not only linking existing work items, but you'll also be able to quickly decompose these items. So if you started at the feature level, you could start up here, and you could just hover over here, and you get a plus button, and you could just start adding stories and different levels right beneath it. So coming soon, again, on all of that. Now, let me take a quick second to kind of show you a bit more here and maybe what you didn't notice. So when I'm on the features backlog and I'm drilling down, what we're seeing is that the features backlog stays in the same order. So nothing changes. Phone support for technicians stayed at the top. And all we did was brought in the stories that were related. But what we've done there is we've ordered those stories in the order from the other backlog. So that's kind of handy. And you can see that our ASADF is right here at the top. Now, if I moved back to the backlog items view, I can do the same thing, but I can actually drill up. And what we're going to do now is do the exact same thing, but we're only showing the items that have been mapped. You'll notice that everything that's outdented or not indented down here essentially isn't parented. And again, what will be coming soon is I'll be able to grab these items and just reparent them right here on the fly. We just don't have it in these early bits. So again, coming soon. So that's kind of the basics of the portfolio management and what I call these higher level backlogs and then this backlog linking. Okay? So I'm going to level set there, and now I'm going to take you through a couple more advanced scenarios. Let's next go into a different project called Tailspin Toys, and we're going to show a few different things here. So I'm in the same basic scenario where I've got stories here, and I've got a features backlog here. So that's kind of nice. Now, one thing that you might notice that is missing is I don't have any sprints down here on the left-hand side. And that's because I'm going to show you a story which is essentially a master team at the high level, which is called Tailspin Toys. And then I've got three child teams down below it. And this is a scenario that we see a lot of customers in, where they've got a higher level backlog where they manage all their work. And then what they want to do is they want to distribute that work across a set of teams. And I'm going to show you how you might do that. So the reason I don't have sprints is because this higher level team doesn't participate in any sprints. Really what they're doing is they're tracking work at this level, and they've got their own Kanban board here. See, I switched it there. I didn't say Kanban. And then you can just essentially view this. They don't need a sprint-specific view. They're just watching the flow view. Okay, so let's go take a look. What I'm going to do is jump over into another team here. So I'm going to go into Tailspin Toys, and we're going to look at the propellers team. And you'll notice that when I jump into the propellers team, we moved into their stories backlog, and they've got their own backlog here of items. The propellers team is a scrum team, so they've got a set of stories here that are assigned to iteration one. These are broken down into tasks. They're using their board. They're using their capacity view. They're using all the kind of traditional stuff that we built in TFS 2012. But what's nice about this is that this team can essentially wait for new work to show up on their backlog that's been assigned. Now, I'll tell you, if you work this way, I wouldn't advise you just to randomly assign work to teams. I don't believe that's a great model. I've seen a lot of teams do this where they might have a sort of scrum of scrum meetings on Monday mornings. And we work with a partner in Bothell who does this. And every Monday morning, all their teams get together. They've got like six scrum teams. I think you've got about 60 people in the room. And they have a grooming meeting on Mondays. I think they do this every other Monday because they're on two-week sprints. And what they do is the product owners come in and talk about items on this higher level backlog. So they might be here, and they might be talking about features and stories in context. And then teams will actually sign up in that sprint to take on some of those stories. Now, I don't think it's always that there's that much freedom. I think at a lot of times they kind of know which stories are coming their way next. But now you've got a way to do that right through the tool, and then a way to manage and visualize that as well. So let me show you that. So let's take this item right at the top, and I'm going to, well, we'll just leave it named the same. That's fine. But I added a tag here called prop, so you could see maybe we mark them up to know that we're going to assign it to the propeller team. So I'm just going to open this up, and I'm going to move it into the propeller area path, and I'm going to save it and close. You'll notice that I get a little message here that says that it's been moved. It's essentially fallen off my backlog at this master team level because I've given it to another team to work on. And then if I was the team here and I went over to the propeller's backlog, let me turn on my tags so you guys will believe me because that's a lot of text to read. You'll see that my prop story now showed up on my backlog. So a team can essentially take this and now prioritize it as needed. Maybe they're going to work on that in the upcoming iteration, so they drag it over to iteration 2. And now you've essentially got this situation where you've got a master backlog at the high level that you're managing, and now you've got teams that have their own backlogs. But these aren't backlogs that are, you know, 100 items long. They're essentially only a few items long because they're only working out a couple sprints ahead. But this is a great view. Now, what I can do from here is this particular team, they can view their stories. If I went up to their features backlog, you'll notice it's empty because they don't own any features. They only work on stories. But what they can do is they can turn on the features filter and they can see all of the features that their stories contribute to. And when this is finally ready to ship, you know, we'll persist all these views. So if you use this hierarchical view, every time you come back, it'll be turned on. And, you know, this might be a stretch, but for me, I think it's real. This gets to me into that purpose argument from Drive, because now I don't just get a random story that's assigned to me, but all the time I can actually map that story back up to the scenario that, or the feature in this case, that that it's fulfilling. And we're seeing this with our own teams as we dog food this stuff internally, that it's already starting to help individual team members understand the context of their work. And I'm a big believer that that gives them more purpose. Okay, so let me continue the story a little bit here. Let me switch over and show you quickly another team here under the Tailspin Toys. And I'm going to show you the Wings team. Now, the Wings team is in a similar situation. They've had work that's been assigned to them from the master backlog. They can roll up to see how it contributes. But you'll notice that this team is really a Kanban team. They don't have sprints either. They haven't chosen to do that. And they're managing all their work through their board. So maybe they're working on a weekly iteration instead of a 2-week or 3-week or 4-week or whatever else is being done. And they're just moving stories through these columns as they go. And they're managing their work in process. And this is a common scenario that I see as well, where you've got an organization where maybe you're all on the same sprint cadence, like we are. We do 3 weeks. Maybe you do 2 weeks or 4 weeks. Doesn't really matter. But you've got a couple teams that want to experiment with a new process. And they might want to experiment with Kanban. And instead of thinking in sprints, they want to think in terms of flow. And now you've got a way to do that because they can have their own board. They can still accept items through the front door, which is the product backlog. And they can move them through their set of swim lanes. So I think that's a fairly powerful story. Okay, the final thing I want to show you here is I'm going to move up to one other project. I called it DevDiv. That's the name of our division, and this isn't exactly the way we do it, but it's close. This actually has one other level. But you'll notice here that I have a whole bunch of backlogs. I have stories, I have features, I have experiences, and I have scenarios. One thing I didn't point out, but maybe I should, is that each of these backlogs has their own cumulative flow diagram as well. So you can watch flow move through these as well there. But I can have all these different items. Each one has their own add panel. You can see that I configured this one to have an assigned to list here as well. So you can change all that. And I can do tagging, everything there. But I can also drill down. And this is where I show you that N levels. So you can see here that I'm drilling down from scenarios to experience to features to stories and tasks. And I don't know how many levels your organization has, but if it's less than 7, we'll support it. And my hope here is that you can use these higher level backlogs to start to get that macro level view of all your work, and then map that to your individual teams and the micro level work that they're doing. So that's essentially the portfolio backlog feature set. Let me check my notes, because I thought there was one other thing I was going to show you guys here. It's not coming to me, so I'm going to stop there. So, okay, so we've got 40 minutes left. I've got a lot more content around our own process, but maybe I'll take a couple questions about this particular feature set, if there's any right now. Does anybody have a question? Yeah, if you, actually shout it out and I'll repeat it. I'll repeat it, don't worry. Yeah.
The problem is we've got the stakeholders needing to see what's going on, but then they're also wanting completion estimates.
Okay.
So can you speak to that?
Yeah. So the question is, he says, we're using SharePoint, we're about to use Project Server, I'm about to shoot myself because of all this complexity. We've got these backlogs, but my stakeholders want estimates, is that right? Completion estimates. Will be done. Okay, so, and the question is, Aaron, how do I tell them when it will be done, right? That's the question, sort of. Okay, so it's a tough question. Estimating in any sense is a difficult problem. I don't know the details of your project, but I'm about to show you how we do it. My high-level advice would be that if you're trying to give them a date that's a year in advance, my guess is you're probably guessing. That's my guess.
More like
8 weeks. Okay, 8 weeks. I think you can do 8 weeks. So if you're doing 8 weeks, I think you should be able to give them a reasonable date. How long are your sprints?
2 weeks.
Okay, so you're working on 2 week sprints and you want to give them an 8 week sort of understanding. So, you know, my hope is that you should be able to do that. I'll actually show you how we do it. Our teams are always thinking 3 sprints ahead. So that's something that we do. And I'll show you the mechanics of that. I've always got a plan in my head for where we're going to get in the next 3 sprints. For us, a sprint is 3 weeks, so that's 9 weeks ahead. And I always have an idea as a product owner of where I want to be. Now, how am I validating that estimate? I'm talking to the guys on my team. I'm talking to the product owners. I'm talking to the dev leads. And we're always estimating out in front of the team. And it's actually not me that's estimating. It's the team that's estimating. So we do what we call backlog grooming in the middle of every sprint, and the team takes a break in the middle of that sprint, and they actually sit down and estimate stories that are further down the backlog, so they know what's coming. And I use those estimates to forecast how things will fit. So that's how I would do it. That's how I would give that 8 week moving window. I thought you were asking the year question, so that one's harder. Yeah. Okay. Any other questions about this? Yeah, go ahead. Okay.
What any given team is doing around a project, you know, pulling items from multiple teams into one view.
Yeah.
So, you know, taking kind of what you've done, I'm trying to envision how I can make that scenario work.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the question is, you know, I've got 8 teams. We're using SharePoint. How can I create a dashboard style view of all of this and make sense of it? And maybe what are you guys going to do to help that? Okay. So let me speak to that. A couple things. Part of it is we're not done here. And I'm going to go out on a limb to make a promise here that right now when I do this and I move to my scenarios board, that was kind of a lame experience because right here I had this great tree of data. And when I moved over here, I just had one level of it. So one of the first places that we're going next is to make what we call hierarchical Kanban boards. And I want to give you, it's almost a story map. And it becomes, in a lot of ways, a dashboard for how you can see all this. And this right here, if I move back to my Tailspin team, which is a little bit of a simpler example, I'm going to show you that this right here, sorry, I'm moving really fast. If you look at ArearPath, this is a view across teams, okay? But if I could view this as a board, as a little bit of a map, it would make a lot more sense to me. So that's number one. Number two is we have some work in progress that we're doing on building some lighter weight charting that's going to show up on the web here that I think will help in that scenario. In terms of the actual many teams view, all I can say is that's kind of next on our backlog. We really broke this problem. Internally, we call this problem Enterprise Agile. So I knew I was going to start to slip into that, so I'm just going to tell you that when we think of Enterprise Agile, we think of three things. We think of the scope element, we think of the team element, and then we think of the schedule element. And when we got started here, we looked at all three, and we said we need to solve the scope first, which is this decomposition and mapping. And so that's where we started. We've got plans on how we're going to do schedule, and team is next. And I think when we get to team, we're going to be building a ton of these, you know, dashboard-style views where you can get that big picture view into what's going on. So hope that helps. Any other questions? Yeah, right here. Yeah. Yeah, so the question is, you know, at a higher level, the boards work great for the team. At a higher level, I struggle with people wanting to go to this tool because they think of it as a developer tool. And it's a tough problem. I would say that we're trying to build our web experiences to not feel like developer tools. We're really trying to target what I would call the product owners and the stakeholders and the people above them. Now, there's APIs for this stuff. Let me be honest. We're not planning on putting this in SharePoint or anything like that. So if you're looking for that answer, I'm not going to go port any of this into SharePoint, into a tool like that. I am trying to get stakeholders and company to be using and be comfortable with views like this. So if I'm, you know, what we're doing internally is we're building these higher level teams, if you will, of the stakeholders, and they go directly to these style boards and backlogs and they use them. So I don't know if that helps answer your question, but that's the way I think about it. Another thing I hope you can do, you asked about physical boards, is we're seeing a rapid trend now of, you know, monitors in the hallway with these types of views up on them all the time. And that's awesome. I would love nothing more. In my original storyboard for this, and we never got to it, so I'm sorry, you know, I'm always apologizing, is we wanted to have sort of a full screen view where I could come up here and just click it and get rid of all the Chrome, get rid of all that stuff above it, and just show me the board so I can hang it in the hallway and just use it as a sort of information radar. I don't have that particular feature, but I see lots of teams doing that already anyway. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so the question is, do they interact with it? So if you've got a lot of money and you're buying touch monitors, then yeah, you can interact with it. Internally, what's interesting, you know what we do? I wish I had a picture. I should have brought a picture. I had this in past things. We actually have a little mobile cart with a projector on it and a laptop. And that's where our teams do stand up. And what they do is that sits out in the hallway all the time. And that's where teams gather. And they have stand up there. And every team just comes up. They bring up their backlog. They bring up their board. And they use the mouse to move the card side to side. Because even at Microsoft, we don't have touch panels hanging in the hallways. But that's the way we do it. And that's how we've chosen to sort of replace some of the physical boards. Now, I'll be honest with you. A physical board is great. There's a lot of things that are great about a physical board. And for a lot of people, they don't want to change. And I don't blame them. But what we're trying to do, I think there's a lot of, while advantages of physical boards, there's a lot of disadvantages as well. Because the only place you can get that information is if you're standing right in front of the board. And what I'm trying to tell people is, hey, I'm trying to give you a physical board-like experience with these type of boards. We're working on touch. We're working on making those experiences great. But this information is available anywhere. If you need to pull it up on your phone or you need to pull it up at home, it's there for you or wherever you're at. So that would be my answer. So, okay, I'm going to keep going now. I've got about 30 minutes left, and I want to jump into some of our own process and share with you how we're doing it. And I think it'll dovetail into a lot of the conversations we've already had. So let me switch back to my slides. Okay. Our process and lessons learned. So how do we do it? I'm going to talk about six things here. I'm going to talk about our roles, our organization, our teams, cadence, plan, and practices. And you heard me talk a little bit maybe yesterday and already today about where we do alignment and where we give autonomy. And in our division, we've chosen to have very tight alignment around roles, organization, teams, and cadence. So what I mean by that is that there's three main roles at Microsoft, and I'm going to dig into these, but we got PMs, we got devs, and we got QA. We all call them the same thing. We all got the same roles. Our orgs are all put together the same. So from a hierarchy or a org chart, they more or less look the same. Our teams are all more or less the same, meaning the roles that make up a team are the same, and our team size is very similar. A lot of people ask me, what's the ideal team size? I don't know, because I don't know your organization. What's worked for us is somewhere in the neighborhood of 8 to 12. I would say 10 is probably average for us, and that would look like, you know, 6 devs, 4 QA, and a PM. And that varies from team to team, but that's about that. But where we give autonomy, and cadence is the same. You heard me talk about this already, 3-week sprints. Everybody, 3-week sprints, that's it. A lot of people ask me, well, what if every team wants their own sprint cadence? And I go, good luck with that. I think it's crazy. I don't think you can make it work. If you've got every team on their own set of sprints on a different schedule and you want the tools to support it and make sense of it, I just kind of cringe. And I go, I can't help you solve that problem. So I think you need to get all on the same sprints. Now, if you are doing this and you have different schedules, come talk to me at the booth. I actually can show you some strategies in the tools for how to do that. I don't want to be too dismissive, but we do 3 weeks. But when we think about our planning and our practices, we give a lot of autonomy there, and I'll show you how that works. So again, we've got three roles, PM, Dev, and QA. Our program manager role, that's what I am. We're responsible to ensure we're building the right thing. So if the feature is great and everybody loves it, I get all the credit. Well, actually, I don't get all the credit. I share in some of the credit. But if it's wrong, I get all the blame. So that's my job. You know what Dev and QA does. When we think of program managers, we think of product owners. You heard me yesterday contrast project manager and product owner. PM is the role in Microsoft, and it's been there forever. But we really think of these folks in terms of product owners. They're not about schedule. They're not about projects. They're about customer value, customer experience. Our program managers write specs. Our program managers talk to customers. Our program managers storyboard and spec features. So these are the guys making sure we're building the right thing. Okay, so how do we put our org together? So we roll up in terms of what we call triads. So I'm a program management lead, so I have program managers that work for me. So I might be one of these middle boxes, like this guy right here, and I've got PMs that work for me. And then I would roll up to a director or a vice president of program manager. So program management. So this is kind of a simplistic view, but you get the idea, you know, that we've got a PM discipline that everybody in the developer division rolls up to. We're talking, I don't know, roughly 1,200 people. You've got, you know, development VP that everybody rolls up to, or director and QA. So from a hierarchy or an org chart standpoint, that's how we look. But that's not really how we think. And let me describe that. What we do is we take a dev team, so that's a dev lead and the people that work for that dev lead. Okay, we take a QA lead and the people that work for that QA lead, and we take one, sometimes two, but usually one PM, and we put them together, and that becomes what we call a team. So when you hear me talk about teams and you hear me talk about our backlogs, this is what I'm talking about. This is the group of people. And these are some example teams that we have. We have a team in North Carolina called our version control team. We have a team in Redmond around work item tracking, and we have one called Collab. And what's interesting about this is that you've got three folks on this team that make up another triad, if you will. So you've got a triad here on version control. And those folks collectively are responsible for the work that goes on that team. And that's how we put our teams together. So a lot of people ask me, they're like, who's the leader of the team? And I go, kind of depends. All three of those people are the leader on the team. There's not one person that's the leader on the team. And we try to make sure that, you know, usually sort of an alpha role emerges. There's somebody who steps up to ultimately lead. I mean, that just happens. But across teams, that can be the QA lead, sometimes it's the dev lead, and sometimes it's a PM. And we're very thoughtful about how we put these together. Now, one thing that's interesting, I wasn't going to talk about this, but when we do reorgs and we put our teams back together, we obviously handpick the leads and make sure we know who the leads are, but we actually let teams select what team they want to work on. And we call it our yellow sticky exercise. And the first time we did this, you sort of get together in a room and people go up to a whiteboard and put their one, two, and third choice next to the team that they want to work on. And then we take all that information and put it together and try as best we can to make that work across the group. And when we did this last fall with the teams that we've currently got now, I think there was only maybe two or three people that didn't get their first choice. I'm just talking about in TFS, so we're talking about close to 160 people. But that's pretty good when you look at the numbers there, that only two or three people didn't get their first choice. Now, what we found is a lot of people go back to where they were. That's pretty common. The other thing is that people love that they got to choose and they got to make a decision. And there's always surprises in this. But you find, again, if you think about autonomy, mastery, purpose, this is autonomy at its best. When you've got somebody that gets to choose the team they want to work on, they're going to be more excited about going to work each day. So that's how we do it. Okay, sprint cadence. We do 3-week sprints. That's just how we do it. This is different. You heard me talk about it yesterday. 2008, 10 to 12 weeks. 2010, we were in the neighborhood of 6 weeks. When we started out on TFS 2012, we moved to 3-week sprints. That was our grand experiment. It took quite a while. It took about 9 months before I think we got good at this, and it was about 9 months in that we realized that we're never going to have what's called a bug fixing sprint or an integration sprint or anything like that again. 3-week sprints forever. Now, another interesting thing that we did a little more than a year ago is we took all the other milestones and we said, let's not have all these other weird milestones that land in the middle of sprints or, you know, randomly on the first day of a sprint. Like we'd say, let's have an offsite. And let's have it on the second day of the sprint. And the teams are just like, what are you doing to me? You're killing me. You know, you're taking away all the leads and stuff right in the middle. And we just said, you know what? The sprint cadence rules. We're optimizing for the team. And we do everything around this 3-week cadence. So when we're planning and being thoughtful about other meetings or other activities, it all works around these 3-week sprints. And I tell you, once we did that, things got a lot better. So what does that sprint look like? These are some of the numbers. We're currently on sprint 49, so you can see that when I was putting these together was a while ago. A sprint looks like this. It looks like a traditional Scrum sprint. Teams do planning on first day. They're done on the third Friday. And there's 2 weekends in between. When we started, we experimented with starting sprints on Wednesday and then ending them on Tuesday. And we thought, oh, that'll be great because the end of the sprint will be a Tuesday, and you know, we thought we were really smart, and this was going to be really great, and we tried it for about 6 months, and everybody hated it, so we changed. So we've experimented a little bit, but this has been good for us. Now, what we do at the end of this third sprint is a week after we're done, the bits for that get deployed to our service. So we're constantly building the service and the box product at the same time. The code base is nearly identical, that we share a ton there. And so every 3 weeks, we're shipping new bits to our service. But that's 1 week after the sprint ends. So some people say, well, is this a 4-week sprint? And I go, it's not, because the team has moved on. So the very, you know, after that weekend, the team shows up on Monday, and they have sprint planning on week one again, and they're ready to go. So it's 3 weeks, 3 weeks, 3 weeks. And then every offset by a week, every third week, we're deploying. There's a few folks from the team involved in this deployment process. I won't go into all the details, but it involves, you know, standing up what we call a pre-production environment, doing some final validation testing, final sign-off. And this is when we do things like we write all of our release notes and documentation, get that all up on the service, and do those coordination activities. So it doesn't take away from the team. There's a smaller group of people involved in this. Now, to somebody's question earlier, that little thing that we do in week two is called backlog grooming. And what that is some teams actually do this on week one as well. Just depends on how much stuff is on their backlog and how far in the future they're thinking. But what they're doing is they're sitting down and they're looking at what's coming up in the next sprint. So I'm going to tell you right now that if your teams show up for sprint planning and they're surprised at what's on the backlog for that sprint, your product owner's not doing a very good job. You need to talk to them about it. Your product owners should constantly be in touch with the team. You heard me talk about this yesterday, about embedding in the team. You can't be in the position where you're surprising your team with new work all the time. You can't. It just won't work. The concept of as a team is that you're working together. And, you know, you're showing them the playbook here, and you're getting their input on the playbook. And when we go into backlog grooming, it's not just sitting down and telling the team what we're going to do next. In a lot of ways, it's asking the team if this makes sense. And it's getting feedback on the design. And it's getting estimates for how expensive this is going to be. We story point things. And we take that feedback and we work it back into the specs and into the designs. So that's a very, very critical step. I see a lot of teams leave that out. And it's helped us in spades. Our best teams are the ones that are really good at backlog grooming. So it's a great thing to take away. And then obviously sprint planning starts and the process repeats. Okay, so some mechanics on the sprint. What does this really look like? This is one of my favorite parts of this talk because I get to share with you one of my favorite things that we do. After the first day of the sprint and all the teams go through sprint planning, they all send out an email. And that email has the goals for the sprint, the stories they're going to complete, and sort of a brief summary of the sprint goal. Whoever the scrum master is sends that mail, or you know, usually it's the PM maybe that sends that mail. Somebody asked me yesterday, you know, who plays scrum master? Our PMs never play the role of scrum master. We usually move that between dev and QA roles. We let them play that role. But the PM is sometimes the voice of the team to leadership, so they might be the one sending this mail. But they kind of inform everybody about what they're doing. Now they'll say, who is everybody? We roll up to Brian Harry. Brian Harry is the leader of a division we call Cloud Services, which has a little more than 400 people in it. All 400 people get this email, okay? All 400. So you can see in the two, I don't know if you can see that, it says VS Cloud Services All. It's a lot of mail, right? But it's great because we're all sharing. We're all sharing what people are doing. And it's one of my favorite times of the sprint is when we start a new sprint, you see all these mails coming through about what teams are planning. I'll be honest, I can't read them all. There are teams I pay attention to, my teams. There are partner teams that I pay a lot of attention to. There are teams that it's just information for me. But I would much rather have us do broad sharing like this than have it be the other way and have it be closed. Now, at the end of the sprint, we do something similar. The team sends a mail at the end of the sprint sharing with everybody what they accomplished. And what they usually do is if they built something new, they put together a little video. And that video might be 5 minutes long. They might put it on the SharePoint site and send a link to it. And everybody can then watch that video. It's a little bit of kind of a sprint sharing. Again, this is really, really fun because you get to see people. Now, there's a trap here, and I'm going to warn you if you pick up this practice. If you start getting Matrix-style movies produced by your teams, they're spending way too much time on the sprint demo, okay? We've had some pretty elaborate sprint demo videos, and you kind of got to say, you know, I don't think blocking off all day Friday to work on the sprint video is really a good idea. So, but it's fun, and the teams enjoy it, and they get to share what they're doing with everybody. And that, you cannot put a price on that, okay? So do it. It's awesome. Again, here's some kind of, this is what the goals look like. I think I had to block this out when I put them together because there's something we couldn't talk about. And then again, they share what they accomplished. Now, there might be some people beforehand ask me, well, what do you do when something isn't finished? And, you know, that's a complicated answer. But the first thing is you be transparent about it. If you're not done, you talk to people. And you can see here, you know, something was ongoing. So what the team will do is they'll put a new story on the backlog. They'll take that remaining work and make sure it's parented to that story. And they might work on that in the next sprint. But, you know, stuff's going to happen. and you're not always going to get everything done. And so you've got to have a strategy internally for how you're going to deal with that. If you want to talk about some of my thoughts on that, feel free to come talk to me at the booth afterwards and I can share. I don't think there's a perfect answer for every situation here. But what I will say you should not do is don't just start randomly moving tasks into the next sprint. That's a bad idea. And what I want you to do most of the time is move the whole story. Breaking stories up is kind of a bad practice, I think. And so if you can, move the whole story. But we can talk about that in detail later. Okay, and then we do these videos. Okay, so how about at scale? Doesn't this create a lot of noise, a lot of spam? Sure it does. Let me give you some of the ways that we do this at scale and some of the practices that we do. So as you kind of expand back and you look at our schedule, the blue bars represent the sprints, the little light blue bar represents that deployment week. We have a practice that every two sprints, okay, so every 6 weeks, we get together for what are called team chats. And the entire team comes into a room with the leadership team for, they have a 15-minute slot, or maybe we did 20-minute slots. And there's three questions that they prepare for. They say, what's next? So give us a view into the next 9 weeks or so. What's coming up on the backlog? Tell me what you're planning next and share that with me. Talk to me about how's the team doing. We talked yesterday about some ways that we manage debt, and we have all our teams report on their debt numbers at this time, you know, how you doing, where you at, things like that. And then just talk about any issues. You know, do you have anything you need to talk to the leadership team about? Is there a problem that you're seeing? Is there a practice we need to change? We see a lot of teams bringing things from retrospectives into meetings like this, and it's a great meeting. It's a lot of fun. So what we'll do is we'll book some time, you know, we'll book a conference room for most of the day. The leadership team's in there all day, and then these teams come in slots. The triad is the one of the team is usually the one doing the presenting, but the entire team is invited. And it's a great conversation. It's a great interaction. There's a trap with something like this as well. We used to have teams sort of preparing. They would put together these elaborate PowerPoint decks, and you know, they'd spend hours preparing for this meeting. And that's not what our leadership team wanted. They said, I don't want you spending time on this. I just want to check in. Just show up. It's a safe place. It's a safe meeting. That's why we call it a chat. So if you adopt something like this, make sure it's safe for the teams. If you want your teams to come in and show you perfect burndown charts and perfect bug numbers and do all that, they will. They'll probably be lying to you, but they will, okay? Make it safe, because the real conversations, the hard conversations, are the ones that you need to have. So that's the way we try to do it. Now, these team chats are a conversation between the team and leadership. Now, I am one of these guys. I'm useless middle management, okay? I don't tell my team's story, okay? They tell their story. What's interesting, our team chats are going on this week. My teams are presenting on Thursday. I'm not going to be there because my teams are capable. They can present without me. They don't need me to tell their story. It's a direct conversation between those folks that are leading that team and our leadership team. If you heard Brian Harry talk later this week, Brian is in all of our team chats. He's one of the most vocal people, and they're talking directly to him. Here's what you want to avoid, okay? And I see this time and time and time again, where we get layers of management and bureaucracy. And before you know it, the team is completely disconnected from the people that they need the feedback on. So get out of your team's way and make sure that they have direct conversations. This is something we've done, and it's been really, really helpful. Okay, how do we do planning? Got about 10 minutes left here, so I'm going to keep moving. We break the year up into six-month chunks, and we call those seasons. We have a spring and a fall, okay? A lot of people start laughing because they're like, you guys live in Seattle, right? That's the way it is anyway, right? Summer shows up on July 4th, and then the leaves fall on July 6th. So January 1st to the end of June is what we call the spring time period. July 1st to the end of the year is the fall period. We think in six-month chunks. Now, the sprints are going on throughout this, but we think, what's our plan for the spring? What's our plan for the fall? That's the way we do it. Usually what we do is put together storyboards and things like that that represent work that we want to get accomplished, and we always have an 18-month vision that we're striving towards. So that 18-month vision is a storyboard as well that kind of captures where we want to go, and every 6 months we're going to be revisiting this. Okay, so that's at a macro level, that's how we think of planning. Now, I'm going to show you some of the mechanics of that. When you think about the work items that we use, we have four big work items. Scenarios, experiences, user stories, and tasks. Scenarios are large initiatives in a release. Experiences are end-to-end set of user stories. You know what a user story is, and you know what a task is. I think in this release, in Visual Studio 2013, I think across the entire developer division, we've got something like 20 scenarios. So it gives you an idea of scale. In TFS, I think we've got 4. So we've got 4 scenarios for an entire release. So it kind of gives you an idea. These are pretty big ones. One of them is called Enterprise Agile. It's what we're talking about here and the work that we're doing to try to support this scenario. So how do we do this? Okay. Here's a scenario. This is actually a scenario from our last release, but this is a picture of what the work item might look like. Here's an experience. Here's a user story. Here's a task. You guys will get this slide, so if you want to look at them later, you can. But what we do is we take that scenario and we build a storyboard. Now, people say, how do you do storyboarding? We do it in PowerPoint. I love PowerPoint. I'm embarrassed to say it, but I'm so good at PowerPoint, you would not believe it. I can group things together, and I know all the shortcut keys. One of the guys on my team recently built a prototype that was so real. I mean, it had clickable objects. It was like, we should have just shipped that thing. It was awesome. But we build these storyboards, and we use them to tell a story. They don't tell a feature. They tell a story, and they're all scenario-based. So, you know, it'll walk through, and it'll describe things, and we use pictures. If you saw the storyboarding PowerPoint tools that we shipped in the last release, fall in love with them. They're your best friend. I love that stuff. And what's great about PowerPoint is you can build out a story at whatever fidelity that you want, and then you can present it. F5, go present it. Get feedback on it. And it's easy to change. So we do this all the time. We attach them to our scenarios. So what we'll do is we'll put together a story for a scenario, and then we'll get our leadership team together for what's called a scenario review, where we'll get feedback on all these things. We have a lot of these reviews. Eventually, that scenario is broken down into a set of experiences. And then those set of experiences are likely distributed across a set of teams. Now, I've kind of given a simplistic example here of Team A and Team B, but it's probably about true. Usually, you have maybe 2 or 3 teams contributing to a single scenario through a set of experiences. Teams own experiences sometimes, but usually it's the leadership team that sort of owns the experiences in the scenario, so there's the ones doing the decomposition at that level. Like, I would be a scenario owner. I would have all the experiences, and I let the team deal in stories, and then I work with them to make sure we're lining it all up and things like that. Now, what we do with these scenarios is we've got that storyboard, we've got our sprint schedule, and every few sprints we get together for what we call a CEV review. I'm embarrassed to tell you that I do not know what CEV stands for. I think it stands for customer experience value or something. I don't know, the V throws me, I just can't figure it out. But it's essentially a rating of where are we at? How good is this thing? And we give it a star rating. And we have folks from our QA team that are dedicated owners of this. And we write out the scenario that you should be able to accomplish. They know what the storyboard is. And then they go through the bits and they try to do it. They try to complete that scenario with the live bits. And at the end of it, they give it a rating, you know, 1 star to 5 star. And there's a whole bunch of notes and stuff that go with this. But then we sit down and we have these reviews where we talk about those ratings. And what we use this for is that it helps us know when we're done. So a lot of people ask me, well, how do you know when you're done? I know when QA tells me that the rating is high enough. And we have goals for the ratings. So, you know, for Enterprise Agile, you know, I'm going to be honest with you guys. We're not getting it all done in this release, right? So my goal for my CEV is probably in the neighborhood of 3 stars. There's going to be some scenarios I can't complete. But that's just stuff we're going to keep working on, and we're just going to keep going on, okay? I'm going to get to 5 stars eventually, I know it. But this is how we use this process to determine whether or not, or how close we are, if you will, and if we're getting to the end and if we're done. Okay, a lot of people ask me this, what about methodology? This is our methodology, so it's not clean. At the team level, our teams look the most like scrum teams. You heard me describe it. Sprints, sprint planning, stand up, all that kind of stuff. We do it. There's certainly elements of waterfall involved. We do a lot of still long-range planning and big picture thinking. I'm not embarrassed to say it, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I do not believe that agile means you don't plan or you don't think ahead. If you do, come talk to me about it. I think agile means building stuff, learning, and applying that learning. And I think you do that in smaller iterations. And you can have a big picture vision for where you're going and use iterations to get there. We're doing a lot with Kanban lately. Again, these high-level backlogs, we're paying attention to work in process and how many things we've got going on. We've got Kanban boards all over the office now. Got a little bit of what I would call a Microsoft methodology. I'm not going to take time right now to describe how we manage bugs, but we don't manage bugs the way everybody else manages bugs, and that's because there's kind of a way that we've done this within Microsoft for a long time, and it's kind of ingrained in a lot of people, and so we just stick with it. It's one of those environmental factors that I'm not going to try to change. Like, we have this concept called ZBB. And anybody know what ZBB is? A few people, okay. Did you work at Microsoft? Yeah, okay, so cheaters, yeah. Calls for zero bug bounce. And what we do is we have a period of time where we want teams, if they've accumulated some debt, to drive their bugs down to, you know, within the last 36 hours, no new bugs have come in that you haven't fixed. And you kind of got, it's a way to get really, really clean. So we're managing bugs all the time, but then we have these other things that we do along the way. And I don't know what methodology that fits into. Finally, we're doing a fair amount of what I would call build, measure, learn. The fact that we've got a service now is really helping us to do this. I can put bits up on the service. I can turn them on for a subset of customers. I can look at metrics on how those features are being used, and I can apply that learning. If you've read the Lean Startup or any of these kind of books, there's a lot of great writing on this stuff now, and I think it's definitely something new that's coming to our industry. I'd encourage you to look into it. You know, use analytics, use metrics to better understand how your customers are using your software. And then finally, we are undergoing a massive transition here in the next 3 weeks. Our entire division will be moving into team rooms. I talked about this in my talk yesterday, but right now we're in a building with offices. We will no longer have offices, and we all sit together. So a team room looks something like this. Got maybe a team sitting in there, a feature team. The PM or product owner sits in there with the dev lead and the QA lead and all those folks. It's really exciting. I think we've wanted to work in this environment for a long time. We've got a lot of people who use bigger offices to kind of create smaller team rooms, and we're going all in. So Brian Harry, when he comes to Redmond, because he lives in North Carolina, but when he comes to Redmond, he doesn't sit in an office. He sits in a team room with other folks. And so it's a grand experiment. I can't wait to come back in a year and tell you guys how I think this went. But I think it's going to cut down on email overhead, and I think it's really going to improve communication. So we're excited about it. Okay, so here's the basics. Teams of 8 to 12, cross-discipline, three-week sprints. These leadership reviews that I call team chats, six-month planning, 18-month vision, and then we use scenario ratings. Okay. I got a minute and a half left. Four things to take away. Less is so much more. You guys, if you're in this talk, you're thinking about the process that your teams use. Just don't go back and build a space shuttle, okay? There's often times when you need to get from point A to point B, and a skateboard will do just fine. Don't build a space shuttle. I see so many people, and we do this ourselves, get into this trap of building these elaborate, massive processes, and nobody knows why we're doing it. Start small, grow it as you need it, and hold retrospectives so you understand what you need to change. Second is build teams. A lot of people, even in the beginning, came up and said, well, how do I deal with when I've got people that work across five different teams? And I say, well, try to get them not to work across five different teams. But I think the definition of a team is a group of people that work together all the time. That's what a football team is. You know, that's what a baseball team is. They don't change teams. So build teams. Wherever you can, build teams. I think we work and build better software when we're building teams. Build rules that make sense for your organization. Rules are not a bad thing, especially if they help your teams move faster. And then in the end, have fun. I think software is fun to build. I think we're in the business of building great software, and I think the best way to do that is have fun. So pay attention to your environments and hopefully build environments where your teams can have fun. So that's it. We're out of time. Thank you very much.